lifestyle choices, and environmental factors impact your brain health and the physiology and psychology of your mental health. When you're ready to turn your brain on to get your game on, listen to In Your Head Radio. Now here's your host, Lee Richardson.
Thanks for being with me today. Today we've got a really interesting show, and we're going to talk about resilience, and that's something that I think every single one of us needs more of. It seems like every day I wake up and there's a new opportunity, but that means that I've got to be able to bounce back and move forward. I've got William Keller, and Bill, he's been an entrepreneur, and his journey evolved from leading manufacturing businesses to founding a Staffing Global, which is a pioneer in remote staffing. At Staffing Global, he aptly combines his manufacturing background with innovative remote team strategies, emphasizing employee development and empowerment. He is a Pennsylvania native, but he currently lives in Columbia, South America with his wife and two children. In his free time, he enjoys reading, traveling, and biohacking. Bill, thanks so much for being with me today.
Well, it's great being on the show. Thank you so much for having me. Appreciate it.
So anytime you change jobs, anytime you change industries, you know, it's harder than we think. And I think it does require personal resilience. And you went from manufacturing to staffing, but a different kind of staffing, you know, staffing with remotely. What skills did you use to help you? I mean, that wasn't just a step forward. That was kind of a leap.
Yeah, that was it was a big change, and it was brought about really by two books that I read. Like you said earlier, I'm an avid reader, and that was not necessarily because I always loved reading. It's because when you start a company, you quickly find out all the things you don't know. And I had this mindset, which was, is somebody has to have figured this out before me. So I better find a book and I better find it quick. And so I just started reading. But during my transition from my, I used to own a log home manufacturing company. During that transition, I read two books. One is The World is Flat by Thomas Friedman. And the other was The 4-Hour Workweek by Tim Ferriss. And it just opened up my eyes to a whole new world of working remotely and just trying to give me some new ideas. And so I took that information, and before I got into the staffing side, I started a marketing company, and I used those principles of using remote overseas workers to run my marketing company. And then later, several years after that, I parlayed that from my marketing company into a remote staffing company, because I had learned to create partnerships overseas to make sure that we had boots on the ground there, but then also learn to develop overseas teams. And then I figured out that I could help other companies to be able to do that.
Well, what do you feel like you required more of, emotional resilience, or was it just the mental aspect of it?
I think, you know, as I go further into my journey, I think understanding yourself is, I think it's Sun Tzu, you know, say, if you know your enemy, you know, you're going to win 50% of the battles, but if you know yourself and you know your enemy, you know, 100% of the battles are won. And I think as I get older, you know, it's just more of knowing yourself and being able to handle your own mental head trash. And so for me, that was probably the most important thing, is just being able to constantly make sure that I was in the right mindset. Because if you're not in the right mindset, even if you're going through the motions, you're not going to get the results that you're looking for.
Boy, that mindset has so much to do with how we do everything, doesn't it?
Absolutely. It's amazing. And that's one of the things I love about reading, is because it can give you a much deeper and better perspective than you might currently have on your own. So,
well, let's talk about mindset just for a minute, because I think when I think about adaptability, for me at the Brain Performance Center, that's mental flexibility. And a lot of times when I see folks that with anxiety or depression, they have very, very low mental flexibility. And I think that I also see that anytime you see a dysregulated brain, And that's all it is. You know, now we've gotten very sophisticated. And if you talk about someone with ADHD or autism, they've got a neurodivergent brain. But all it means is that they process information differently. And I think that when we're struggling, when we're challenging, when we're thinking through major decisions, we all start to process information differently. And I think, you know, emotional intelligence, that when for those of us that like to use it, I mean, that really requires that self-awareness, is what you said, being aware of what you got going on in your own head.
Absolutely. You know, I think we talked a lot about perspective. For me, perspective is key, because once we can learn to change our perspective, I think that's like the key that allows us to change our mindset. Because right now, as you see change coming, you think, oh, this is going to kill me, or, you know, this is automatically going to be bad. And for most of us, we really can't know whether something is good or bad in the moment. Only in the process of time can we really see that. And even then, it's difficult. I don't know if you've ever heard the story of the Chinese farmer. I think of that story often as I think of change in my own life. Have you heard of that?
No, it sounds like an interesting story.
Well, the story of the Chinese, I think it was originally heard it from Alan Watts. And basically, the story goes that there was a Chinese farmer. He had a horse, and that horse ran away. And everybody in the village came to him and says, oh, this is horrible. And, you know, this is the worst thing that could ever happen. And he says, maybe. And then the next day, the horse came back, but he brought 7 wild horses with him. And now he was a rich man, right? And everybody said, this is fantastic. You know, this is the best thing that ever happened. And he says, maybe. And then the next day, his son was out trying to break one of the wild horses, and his son got kicked off the horse and broke his leg. And then everybody, of course, comes around and says, this is horrible. This is the worst thing that ever happened. And he says, maybe. And then the following day, the conscription officers come to take men to the army, but they don't take his son because of his broken leg. And everybody comes, this is fantastic. And he says, maybe. And you know, I think the moral of that story is we really don't know what's good or bad. We equate pain with good or bad, but that's really not the case in most things, because you go to the gym, it can be painful, but it's actually a good thing. It's helping you to grow, helping you to get where you want to go. And so it's a story that I think of often, because if there's pain in the moment, we're thinking it's bad. When I want to change my perspective and say, I don't know if it's good or bad, but I'm going through it. Let's see how we're going to grow from that. So
I love that story. And I think, you know, it reminds me with when I had my kids were younger. Mom, can I have this someday? And as they got older, they realized that someday never did come. But it's the same, you know, it's the same thing. You just don't know. I didn't know if they could have it or not someday. So I guess maybe is something that when you started your staffing, your global staffing, how much maybe was there in that?
Oh, it's, you know, there was a huge amount of maybe. I think for any business owner that's starting that, you have to be what I tell people that say they want to start a company. And I think in today's day and age, you look at Instagram, you look at TikTok, and there's all these people, oh, you should start a company. It's going to be easy. And, you know, everybody's making millions in months. And I'm like, okay, well, that wasn't my experience. Maybe it can happen. There's people that are smarter than me. But I'm like, I don't see that really happening. And, you know, you're going to have a lot of faith and be uncomfortable. You need to be comfortable being uncomfortable, you know, if you're going to go into business. And so that's what I found in starting the staffing company, because working overseas, many people have, you know, certain connotations of that. Oh, I'm exploiting people overseas, which could be nothing could be further from the truth than that. But that's something that I had to deal with, right? That's, you know, people are going, oh, this doesn't work. And, you know, oh, you know, maybe for big companies, but not for us. Or, you know, all of this rejection that comes. But I persevered, and it's worked, and it's been awesome.
So would you substitute rejection, failure? Are those two words interchangeable?
I would not say so. Rejection and failure? No, mm-hmm. I think rejection is the precursor to success for the most part, and for failure. So rejection, I mean, you have to go through rejection if you're going to get to success. So I would think they're on the opposite end of the spectrum, actually.
Well, where I was going that was learning from failure. When I started my cash business in 2009, after 2008, looking back, I thought, that probably wasn't my timing, and my business model might have been off a little bit, but I made it through, and I learned. I really learned from that. And so when I look at being, whether I fail or whether I'm rejected, there's something to learn from it.
Oh, absolutely. So in that way, what you're talking about, I would absolutely 100% agree, right? So those things, I think that you can learn from rejection. You can learn from failure. You have to be learning from rejection. You have to be learning from failure. That's what, if you're not doing that, then, you're never going to get to success. So absolutely.
Well, I think that ties into what you were saying about being adaptable and being able to be agile. You've got to be able to react and keep moving forward. And so many people I see, and part of that might be the business I'm in, the Brain Performance Center, but people get stuck.
Yes, I think there's also this mindset of it shouldn't be that way, right? It shouldn't, I shouldn't have to do that. There's a sense of entitlement. And I live in Colombia, and if you look around, that quickly goes away when you see the people. There's many people doing very well here in Colombia, but there's many people that are struggling. And for me to go, well, it shouldn't be that way, it shouldn't be that hard, I could look at them and say the same thing. Why should they have to have that type of, hard life? And, I think that we have this sense of entitlement rather than going as I've been blessed, and change is just part of the process. So,
well, when you think back at your experience as a leader and being a leader in different industries, I'm sure requires different factors influence. But when you think back, can you share an experience where you led your team through a really significant crisis?
I absolutely can. So before I got into the staffing and the marketing company, I had a manufacturing company. I manufactured log homes. And so I'm going to give you a little bit of background about the business, which would kind of make sense to understand the crisis that happened. And in that, we had about 50 employees, 25 subcontractors, to kind of give you a scale of the. And this is a business that I dropped out of college to start with my father. We didn't have any money at the time, and basically we found a partner to back us. And this partner was a very interesting partner, because I'm not sure if you're familiar with like Mennonites. So this gentleman actually drove a horse and buggy. All right. So he is not somebody you would normally think of being a business partner in that way. And he had a background in accounting. And so his community came to him and actually asked him to invest money. And so he started building these businesses, and we were one of these businesses. And so he started collecting investments from 1,500 people in 7 states. And over a period of probably 10 years, he was doing this, and finally got investigated by the SEC. And through our relationship and our partnership, I kind of got dragged into that. And that put basically our whole manufacturing business at risk. Our capital was at risk, and our cash that we needed to be able to operate the company was at risk. And we were in significant trouble. And basically, it was my job to kind of lead us through. And I didn't really necessarily know what success even looked like at the time. I had an idea we can get through this, we can be successful out the other side. And as we went through the crisis, the situation changed, it got worse. And my definition of what success looked like moved from, hey, we can survive this and get through, to I need to sell the company so that everybody can keep their job except for me. So that's what eventually happened. I think out of our 50 people, like three people, did not keep their job. And for me, that was success, but that's was the crisis that I led us through. And so that was probably the most challenging time that I've had in business. And, when we look back at, we talked about the Chinese farmer. At the moment, I was like, this is the worst thing ever. But as I look back at it, it was probably one of the best experiences of my life to prepare me, and so that I can go into almost any situation now and, I can sleep just fine. I'm not going to lose much sleep over it. And I'm going to be able to navigate through that. And I'm going to be able to not just react, but respond in a way that I think is appropriate, so that I'm actually not allowing my emotions to overtake me. And I'm really making the correct decision for the company and hopefully for the team as well.
Well, listening to your story, there's a lot of emotion in there. I mean, here's a guy that obviously you trusted, that you worked with for a period of time. And then all of a sudden, you were brought, you said you were kind of brought in. I think you were dragged right in the middle of it. And I think you were stuck with the problem. Here it is. Figure out how to fix it. Looking back at that, what would you give yourself the most credit for?
Oh, that's the most credit for. I mean, I try to give my team the credit as a leader. I try to take the responsibility and take all the blame and try to move the credit to my team. I think trying to put other people's needs before your own is the biggest credit, because at the time there wasn't much upside for me either way. So if I continued forward, there was a chance I could save things. But if I didn't sell the company, there was a chance that everybody would lose their job. And so I decided at the time that it was more important, as a business owner. Most people think, oh, well, it's all this sunshine and roses. But at the time, I had 50 mortgages to pay, or whatever, you have rent or whatever, because I had 50 employees and it was my responsibility to take care of them. So I think putting them first and making sure that even when I sold the company, I didn't have a job, got bout with very minimal money, didn't have a college education, didn't really know what I was going to do, but I figured things were going to work out, and they did. So.
Well, that's an interesting story. Tell us your next step. Tell us what you did next.
So I talked to some other people around, and I actually got a job in sales because I'm going through looking at the jobs, and I'm going, as a business owner, you get to do so many different things. I knew enough to bug my friends, but not really enough to get a job in pretty much any field. And so that was a little bit difficult, because I was like, yeah, I do that, but I don't have the qualifications to be able to do that. And I don't know that I did it at that level that, I would have been an expert in whatever field it would have been. And so really the only thing I could do was either sell or start a company. So I went into sales. I was supposed to be the sales manager and also doing some selling as well. And I got there the first day and they told me, oh, you're not going to be sales manager. You're just going to be selling. So talk about, a blow, you move from the president of a company and, then you're going to take over and be a sales manager. And then you're in sales, which is perfectly fine, but it starts to hit your ego. And then, so we went through that process. I quickly found out what they didn't know about the company, about they were in the printing business, and I had had a printing company before this. So I quickly found out what they didn't know about printing, and I quickly found out what I didn't know. And basically, after about a year, we parted ways, but then I started basically a buying group for printing and marketing services. I used the information in those two books we had talked about earlier, The 4-Hour Workweek and The World is Flat, plus some others, and I started a marketing company, and that was basically a buying group. So people would join my group like Costco, and then I would source for them and buy them products and save them a bunch of money. That was the plan. And then I was using overseas resources to help me to execute on that plan. And that was my first foray into using remote overseas staff. And then I transitioned that after about 5 years into the staffing company.
You're a self-made man.
I wish that were the case. So I've had many influences in my life, and I tried to do the work myself, but I wish I could say it was all me. But so many things that come about, it's all because of my mentors and the influences I've had in reading. I give them the credit. So,
well, let's talk about the role that mentorship can play. Because I think sometimes in corporations, they're formalized programs, and women are not the best at creating informal mentorships. And it sounds like, were your mentors formalized or were they informal? I think everybody could benefit from a mentor.
Yeah, I would say most of my mentors were more informal. They probably didn't even know they were my mentors. There's an author that I like, Andy Andrews. He wrote The Traveler's Gift, and he says that I have a board of directors, and they help me make all my decisions. They don't even know they're on my board of directors, but they are, right? And so I think for many of my people, they were like that. You know, I was just, because I had such an intense need because of the challenging situations I was in, I was on a quest for information. And so
go ahead. That's a great message for, I don't want our listeners to miss out on that. That is such a great message, because you had an intense need. You had the adaptability to figure out who could help you. And you didn't just sit back and wait for them to come to you.
Well, waiting for them to come to you, that's at least in my world, maybe it would be in somebody else's world, that I've never had that happen. That very rarely happens. I think, you need to really go out there and make it happen and put yourself. I mean, if it does happen, it's generally because you put yourself out there, maybe in another field, and something happens accidentally or the serendipity kicks in. But it's generally, you're not sitting in a corner waiting for somebody to show up. I think you really need to put yourself out there in the world. And that's what I've tried to do. And, and then the teachers came.
There you go. Ask and you shall receive.
Yes.
Well, when you think back over your experience, you had to make some difficult leadership decisions. When I think about, 50 mortgages, mm-hmm. that made my throat tighten just a little bit. And what kind of decision-making process did you go through to make? Because what you did is you put those people in front of yourself.
And I think that's what a leader needs to do. You know, in today's world, we often see people that are, taking incredibly huge salaries. And I'm not, I'm a capitalist. And I think, if you can make the money, that's awesome, right? I think that's the reward for the risk that you take. But at the same time is you have people that you need to take care of. I think that as a leader, it's your job to do your best to do right by them. And so I think putting them first in that, it's just, part of, I think, determining what type of leader you want to be. And, people see leadership in different ways, but going back to what type of legacy, what do I want people to be able to say about me when, I'm done at the company or when I die, what is going to be important for me? And when you clarify that, then it really starts to help you to clarify your decisions in your leadership process.
Well, it's interesting. I just completed my PhD, and my dissertation was on the experience of leaders in a crisis decision-making. And part of that, the lit review, was looking at all the different leadership styles. And there's styles, there's theories, there's so much out there. Is there anything that, for our listeners, that you read that really helped you to define your leadership style?
I don't know if you've ever heard of the explorer Ernest Shackleton. Have you heard of him?
No, I haven't.
So he, in the early 1900s, He was an explorer trying to get to the South Pole, didn't make it there first, so he really didn't get the credit, and decided that he was going to go across the continent in dog sled. And basically, so he was on this journey. He was in a ship called the Endurance, and got stuck in the ice. I think it was in the Weddell Sea. And so he thought the ice might clear up and they would continue on their journey, but it didn't. It actually crushed the ship. And so there he was. Basically, the ship is sunk. They're on the ice. And his mission has moved from becoming this incredible explorer traversing Antarctica to getting his men back alive. And, you know, basically following him through that journey, it might sound overdramatic, you know, you're in business, he was working on saving people's lives, but at the same time, as some of the principles that he had in his book were really critical, there was all these different, you got to understand in the book all the different types of people that he had with him. You know, some people were really loyal, some people were malcontents, and how he managed all these different personalities to make sure that he could keep a cohesive spirit moving forward, because he knew the times were going to be incredibly tough. And basically, he was able to navigate them through that process and saved everybody. And it was it's an awesome story. So if you've ever get to read, I think the book is called Endurance. It is a great read. But you know, going through that process and understanding, you know, how he put his men first, what he did, how he sacrificed, how he, you know, gave examples for the men. I think it was really influential in you know, shaping what I thought of leadership.
Well, and it's interesting because that sounds very similar to the servant leadership style.
And go ahead. Sorry.
And it amazed me because it had different industries. I had a commanding officer from the military, and they described the servant leadership style. And then I had a business owner with a healthcare facility, and they described a servant leadership style. So it goes back to what we were talking about earlier, that mindset. What's your mindset?
Yep. And I'm not sure what your faith is, but, you know, you talk about servant leadership. I think of Jesus, and, you know, he didn't come here to serve. You know, but didn't come here to be served, but to serve. And so I often think of that, and, you know, what am I here for, right? Am I here to be served, or am I here to serve, right? What is my highest use? And oftentimes, you know, go to mindset, we think that service is often bad because it puts it as at a lower position. And I don't see that at all. You know, I see that is it's a privilege to be able to serve. And so.
Well, thank you for those words. And thank you for bringing up Jesus, because, you know, I think that people are seeing Jesus in a different light. There's it was a TV show, and now there's a movie called The Chosen. Mm-hmm. And I've actually watched a few of those. And he was so much here to serve and help others.
Absolutely.
It certainly is inspiring, and it certainly has helped me do a check-in a couple of times. You know, but when you are a leader, I think one of the hardest things that I have found is to keep everybody's motivation up. I mean, as long as we're rocking and everything is good, that it's not an issue. But I'll remember a couple of years ago when Governor Abbott said, you have to close your business. And at the time I closed my business due to the pandemic, I didn't know, will I reopen? When will I reopen? And the people that worked with me, I didn't know what to say to them, except, you know, we'll be back bigger, better, and stronger. And, you know, that didn't really get the response that I had hoped for. Yeah. How do you keep people motivated? Are there strategies that you employ?
Well, I think understanding what people are needing at different times. I think so. While when I was younger, I was much more reactive than I am now. And so I had a lot of energy, and, you know, I was often more louder and boisterous, but I think there's a time for that. And so I use something called the pendulum theory. I don't know if you've ever heard of the pendulum theory. They use it in sales and Sandler sales, if you've ever heard of that. But people have a, let's say there's a big challenge, somebody comes to you with a customer service challenge, and I'll get back to your, this is getting to your question about how to keep people motivated, but they're often needing something emotionally. So let's say somebody brings you a problem and says, hey, this, you know, my burger was wrong, right? You know, and if you say, oh, you know, I'm sorry to hear that, I'll correct it. They see it as a bigger problem. Your lack of response, even though maybe you're responding in some way, your lack of like kind of outrage makes them have to respond even more. Okay. And so if you come in, that's horrible, and much more response than you maybe even think that you might need, it allows them to basically say, oh, you've got this, right? You're taking on my pain. You're taking on my complaint. I see that that it's important to you. I see that you're responding. I can now breathe easier. And so I think there's times as a leader when you need to not necessarily be the calm, cool, collected person you think you need to be and say, oh, everything's going to be fantastic, right? But actually come in and be able to show them the expression, not necessarily getting out of control, but for them to understand that you understand what they're feeling. And then they can go, and breathe easier. I don't know if that makes sense. So I think in those situations where you have very difficult decisions is, you know, this is tough. This is the worst thing that, you know, I've ever seen. But this is what I'm doing to make it right. This is what I'm doing to ensure that we provide the best outcomes as possible for you. Rather than just saying everything, hey, we're going to come back bigger and better, which might be true, but in the moment, are they able to believe that? If you can't see a direct line between what you're telling them, where they're at, and what you're telling them is going to be, I typically don't go that direction because they're probably not going to believe you. Does that make sense?
It does make sense, you know, and it's interesting because in a few years before that, I had my office destroyed, everything in the office completely destroyed by a tornado. And that's horrible. That's pretty unusual in Dallas. But I just happened to be in the, you know, geographically undesirable space. And it was interesting, I'd been out of town and I came home and I got up the next morning and I went to the health club and I'm on the treadmill and I'm watching TV and I'm seeing the news and I'm like, wow, that looks like the space around my office. And my office was very close to a big private school and I'm like, okay, that is the space right around my office. And I started trying to get up there and I was convinced that there was nothing wrong, absolutely convinced. I was wrong for sure. But as I stood there and I felt my feet sinking into the wet carpet, the thought that came to me, you're going to get through this. You're going to come back bigger and better and stronger. And I did. And my staff was there with me. So I think that to your point that people kind of have to believe it a little bit. For them to even connect with it. But that's so funny because that's our affirmation in the office. It's okay. We're going to come back bigger and better and stronger. I mean, after a tornado and the pandemic, I think that we're in pretty good shape.
And that's, you know, I think absolutely you need that belief. And so don't mishear me. I think there's that hope, but I think there's also, I don't know if you know, I think it was Stockdale, who was in the Vietnam War, who was in a prisoner of war camp, you know, and it was the people that were always the most optimistic who didn't survive, right? And so I'm a very optimistic type of person, right? So I believe we can get through this. So I'm going to be able to tell them this is where we're headed, right? I'm going to work to build this bigger and better. We're going to come back and this is what we're working towards. But at the same time, is I don't discount the difficulty in the current situation. right? I think we often sugarcoat it, and that's not good because it's going to get difficult. And if they're not prepared for that, then you're going to have problems.
Well, and it is what it is. Yeah. there's not much else to say about it. But it's so interesting because, you know, to talk about it and to hear, because I think everybody, communication is to communicate effectively with your team is so important. And, you know, I'm interested because you've been through, I mean, you have 50 people and they're worried about, you know, am I going to lose my house? Am I going to lose my job? And how did you communicate with those people? Because they were actually your stakeholders.
Yeah, I think you communicate differently with different parties in the company, depending upon how much they trust you and their level of maturity. And so I tried, there was probably different messages for different groups within that company. So there's the message I tell everybody, right? And then there's the message I tell my inner circle. And they shouldn't be contradictory, but at the same time is there's probably more that I'll share with certain groups because I believe that they can understand it better. They know how to deal with it. So the message basically is for the larger group is, hey, we're experiencing this challenge. It's a big deal, right? We're not going to sugarcoat it. We've got some challenges ahead. I'm going to need your help to get through this, right? If you're not going to be part of the solution, then it's better that you leave now, right? I'm not pushing you out, but I'm telling you it's going to be difficult. If you don't want to be part of the solution, you know, then it's time for you to go. And I think we really need to concentrate our efforts so we give them a vision of where we're headed, so they also understand that I'm on the job, I understand the importance of the issue, I'm doing everything that I can, I'm taking care of, you know, everything that's in my power, and I'm taking responsibility for it. So I think that's the overall message that I often try to send to the larger group. And then there's often subgroups within there, like I talked about, inner circle, that, you know, I'm going to give them more details. I don't necessarily always need to give the bigger group all the granular details that for many people that might be overthinkers are going to take that information and just mull it over and over and over in their head, and nothing good is going to come from that. So I try to keep it pretty high level. And then for the other group, I will then, you know, try to narrow that down, give them some more actionable information that they might be able to help me with as we move forward to try to find a solution. So don't know if that answers your question or not, but.
Well, I love that because I think it's based on the need to know. We've got about 3 minutes left. And if I ask you, what are the key takeaways on leadership for our listeners? What would they be?
I guess understand your reasons for being in leadership. You know, why are you there? You know, are you there? Go back to our servant leadership. You know, are you there to make yourself $1 billion? Or are you there to serve them and to make a difference in the best way possible for you and your team? And so I think that goes for me. There's two theories of wealth creation in my world, which is the extraction model. How much can I extract from somebody and how much will they pay and how much can I extract? And the other is the value model. How much value can I bring to them and what will they pay me for that? So I try to go on the value model. So I think understanding why you're there, what your goals are, and you know, understanding that you're going to have to constantly be learning and reinventing yourself. So those are some of my top takeaways.
Well, those are great takeaways. I particularly like the one about learning because I've been in business since 2009 and I'm still learning that I have to do things differently every single day. So I can't thank you enough for sharing your experience with me today, Bill. And for people that are out there, are you a social media participant?
Well, you can look me up on LinkedIn. That's probably the best way to get connected, and I'd love to connect with you there. So William Keller on LinkedIn, and you'll find me under Staffing Global there.
Okay. Well, I appreciate your time and your energy today. And I, as we all move forward, and you know, it's an election year here in the States, and that certainly puts some different context around leadership. So in 30 seconds or less, as we move forward towards the election and leadership, is there anything you would share with our listeners?
I think forget the government. If it's meant to be, it's up to me. Basically, you know, you are the government. Basically, everybody kind of looks to external sources as for their hope and salvation. But obviously, I think that you really need to be looking more inward than outward. If you think the problem is with them, I think you're sorely mistaken. You have much more chance of changing yourself than you do of changing the government.
I love that. Thank you so much for answering that. That was a loaded question. And what that said to me was we all got to get out there and vote. Thank you so much, Bill.
Hey, have a great day. Thank you.
On behalf of Lee Richardson and the Brain Performance Center, we want to thank you for listening. If you'd like to hear more episodes like this, visit us on iTunes, Google Play, TogiNet, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and thebrainperformancecenter.com.